Hello?
Booster?
Yeah.
The three amigos together again.
Hey, Booster.
Leander's actually on?
Leander's on. Yeah. He actually sounds good.
Oh, wow.
Is there anything that anyone specifically wants to talk about before we jump in? Good. Hello, and welcome to the Cultcast, the best hour and a half conversation, the Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. Normally we go 30 minutes. That's definitely not happening this week. My name is Erfan Elijah. I'm your host, and I'm back again with the world traveler, Leander Caney, joining us live from Paris. Hey, Leander.
Hey, Erfan.
I saw that picture of you wearing a beret and holding your baguette. You look great.
Right, that was funny.
In the culture.
Oh, I'm totally social French culture.
Buster Hines back with us. Hey, Buster.
Hey, man.
And we've got a new guest. Cult of Mac deputy editor John Brownlee is here.
Hey, hello, John. Hello, hello.
And boy, do we have a good show planned for you today. It is, of course, going to be about WWDC. You may have heard our episode that came out on Tuesday. That was all about the new MacBook Pro with Retina display. We're definitely going to be talking more about that because I want to hear all your guys' opinion on that computer. I definitely have some opinions too. And I actually went to the Apple Store today to play with it. And actually, why don't we just start with that? John, do you have a unit to review yet?
No. I got in right on the wire to order one, but they seem to be pretty hard to get even now, like in the Apple stores. There aren't a lot of reviews on the net for it yet. Like, you've got the usual suspects, like the Wall Street Journal, who have managed to get one. But I think our review is going to be up on Monday. Okay. That's the earliest.
Well, let me just ask you guys this. Leander, let's start with you. After hearing the specs, so let's actually just go through those really fast. So it has Retina display, right? The MacBook itself is thinner. It's lighter. It's about 1.2 pounds lighter. It's got all the new Ivy Bridge Intel chipsets. It's got a faster graphics card, a faster discrete graphics. It's got HDMI out, USB 3. Is this something that you really want to have? Is it highly desirable to you? Or is it more like, I'll stick with what I am using now?
To be honest, I'm sticking with my iPad.
Really?
I really don't. You know, it looks like a beautiful machine, and I can see how a lot of people are getting very excited about it, especially pros. Mm-hmm. But to me, I think I've bought my last laptop. I think I didn't even bring my laptop. I just brought an iPad with me here.
Yeah, I noticed from that email you sent me. It was all wonky. I was like, what? And it said, at the bottom it said, sent for my iPad. And I was like, there you go.
It's full of typos, right?
It is full of typos, actually. Yeah. Well, great choice.
I'm steaming ahead to the future. I'm just going all iPad now. For someone like me who's just sort of mainly does email and writing, I don't have to do any video editing. I don't have to do any digital image editing. Nothing. No heavy lifting. So I don't think I need a laptop anymore. I really don't.
Wow, John. What about you? What do you think?
I think that basically I feel the same way. Like, I mean, it's a beautiful machine. Like, very svelte, very sexy. But I'm a writer. Like, for thousands of years, we used a feather dipped in like ichor. So like, I mean, you can do it on anything. Like, you know, there's still people typing on typewriters, for God's sakes. So like, I kind of, it's a beautiful machine, but I mean, a few thoughts. It's way overkill for what I do. I mean, it's great for videos, professionals and stuff, but for me, it's too much. Second of all, like, I am not going to be caught dead carrying a 15-inch laptop around ever again. Like, the 11-inch MacBook Air, I mean, I'm not in Leander's camp where I feel that that I can go with an iPad only. Like, I mean, there's just too much multitasking
in what
we do. Like, and, you know, not multitasking in the sense of, like, switching between apps, but multitasking in, like, here's one window and then right next to it is a window that you're consulting. Like, the iPad can't do that yet. I mean, maybe someday, like, Windows 8 in tablet form is experimenting with that sort of thing. So it's possible, but you know, until that comes, I couldn't use the iPad only. But the MacBook Air, like, it's beautiful. It's the perfect size. It's effortless. Like, it's so. It feels so fast. Yeah, it doesn't have all of the silicon guts that the new MacBook Pro does, but it doesn't really need them. Like, if you are, you know, somebody who is below the professional level, like, a MacBook Air should be everything you need. And I'm just not going to carry around. Like, you know, yeah, the new MacBook Pro is the smallest MacBook Pro yet, but that's still pretty huge.
Buster, before I ask you what you think, because I definitely want to know, I need to mention today's sponsor. I was so excited that I actually forgot to mention them at the beginning of the show, which I've done before. And the sponsor of our show today is DigiDNA, the makers of DiskAid, the iPhone, iPad, and iPod transfer tool for PC and Mac. And I've actually been playing with this software for the last week, and it's actually really cool. And I want to tell you guys about it during the middle of the show, probably. But if you want to check it out now, just go to digidna.net. That's digi, digidna.net. And Buster, MacBook Pro with Retina display. What did you think?
My feelings are pretty similar to John's. For what I do, I definitely don't need a MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
And I went to the Apple Store too yesterday just to see it. And I was like, oh man, it's really thin, and you know, it's gorgeous display and everything. But at the same time, the 15 inches is just, it's way too bulky for something that I would want to be using all the time, you know? It feels like a desktop computer almost.
Well, unlike you guys, I actually, you know, need a MacBook Pro because I work with video a lot. I work with images a lot. So I would love to have a MacBook Air, but that's not a viable option for me. So I was genuinely interested in buying one of these, and I'm kind of, you know, on the fence. I was on the fence, and now I'm kind of in the no camp. I went and played with it. It's beautiful. Like you said, John, it's svelte, it's sexy, and it is thinner, but it's not thin. It's lighter, but it's not light. And you know, the screen really does look fantastic, but it's kind of like when you got the new iPad and you're like, whoa, this looks better, but it's not resolutionary, if you will. It is, but you know, it's not as dramatic. The effects aren't as dramatic as the price would have you believe. And that's kind of my problem with it is, you know, the $2,200 model comes with 8 gigabytes of RAM, and the 256 flash storage, you know, module, whatever you want to call it now. I'm not even sure what the vernacular is now that it's changed. I keep wanting to say SSD, but that's not really what it is, right?
Right.
I think that's what it is, isn't it?
Is it? Well, no, it's not really.
It's a bunch of flash chips soldered onto like a board, so it's not really an SSD. It's storage.
Well, but isn't that what an SSD is? Isn't that just, maybe I should know this, but I always thought that was just a bunch of flash chips crammed into an enclosure.
Well, before we argue the minutiae of it, I mean, I'm not even sure if we know that yet. I know iFixit did a breakdown, but they said it was removable. So I don't think it's soldered on there. But it is a custom Apple. I guess when I say SSD versus flash storage, I guess for me that means, is it something that you can buy from Amazon or Newegg, or is it something that you have to buy from Apple? You have to buy it from Apple at this point because no one else makes it. It's just totally proprietary, right? So it's not a standard SSD.
Well, I mean, just like the MacBook Air is upgradable, like it came out today that the new MacBook Pro should be upgradable. Like, you know, there should be people like, what is it? Yeah, exactly. OWC, who release modules for it to upgrade it later. You know, I think that that's, I mean, the RAM is what is not going to be upgradable because that is soldered on.
Exactly. And that's kind of where my big problem with this computer is. It's no longer a computer to me. It's a computer appliance. And I think the difference is that nothing in it is really that upgradable. So iFixit did a breakdown. They gave it their lowest fixable score, 1 out of 10. I mean, this thing is a solid unit. They don't want you opening it. Everything in it is like either glued or screwed down. The RAM is soldered on. So once you buy your 8 gigabyte, you know, MacBook Pro, that's what it is for life. You can't upgrade it. And for me, that's a big problem because, you know, usually when you buy, you know, more RAM or a larger SSD, there are other people that can sell that stuff. And it is a much, you know, you know, it's much less costly to buy it from a third party than it is to buy it from Apple. And Apple's upgrade is $200 for the extra 8 gigs of RAM if you want it, which actually isn't bad. But, I mean, 8 gigs of RAM is pretty cheap these days. And if you waited 6 months to a year, it's going to get even cheaper. And you kind of lose that flexibility when you buy this machine. I mean, it's kind of like buying an iPad, really. I mean, what you have is what you have for the life of the unit. And that's kind of a big problem for me. And I really don't like that Apple's going that direction.
Well, don't you think 8 gigs is plenty, though? Don't you think that's probably all the RAM?
Well, it is now. It is now. But what about in a year and a half?
And actually, I don't know if that is plenty. Like, these are units for video professionals, like doing serious processing stuff, you know. And you need more RAM to drive a screen that pixel dense. So it's plenty for you and me, but for the professionals that this is aimed for, this device, this 256 gig, 8 gig of RAM, that's nothing. That's actually like. That's the bare minimum that most professionals need, because like they need maxed out RAM. And like if you're doing a lot of video editing, which you're supposed to be doing on a machine like this, you need way more than 256 gigs.
Well, that
storage.
Is my next big problem, right? I mean, that's exactly my problem with this machine is I need more than 256 gigs. And the most expensive upgrade on this machine is the flash storage. If you go up to, you know, the 512 unit, now all of a sudden your computer costs $2,800 for a laptop.
Well, right, but you're not going to do video editing on board. You're going to be attaching a Thunderbolt drive or even a USB 3 drive.
Well, yeah, yes and no. I mean, the way I normally do it, my workflow is I import everything to my computer. I work on it on my computer, and then I back it up to, you know, an external drive. I don't want to carry around another hard drive with me everywhere I go. You know, like if I want to edit photos, I want them to be with me, you know, when I'm on an airplane, when I'm, you know, going somewhere out of town, whatever. I don't want to carry an extra piece with me.
Well, yeah, but surely that's like the compromise from like being cheap, like on it, you know, like, I mean, I'm not saying you're being cheap. I'm just saying that like, if you're going to spend less, like, I actually think that Lander has a really good point there. Like that, you know, they're giving you what, two Thunderbolt. I mean, that's huge. Like there's nothing out there with a Thunderbolt connection, and they're giving USB 3. Like there are storage options. Like I think Lander's right that you're probably not supposed to use the storage drive. There are ways around this for professionals who go with the base model. I think the RAM is probably the bigger issue.
Yeah, there are definitely ways around it. I agree. But I know there are going to be people out there who, you know, definitely want to have that extra storage. And in order to get it, you have to pay quite a large sum for it. I mean, if you upgrade from the 512 gigabyte flash module to the 768, it's an extra $450 just for that. So it's obvious that the main expense on this thing is those flash modules. Still, they're so expensive still. But in any case, it is a beautiful machine. I played with it for about 30 minutes at the Apple Store, which I thought was kind of enough to get a good feel of it. And yeah, I'm not going to buy one. And if you're interested in getting one, I would recommend that you get the one with like the higher amount of flash. Don't get the one with the bigger SSD, because that thing is just going to eat away at your money. I think you can get one. Well, yeah, for $2,400 with 16 gigs of RAM, which I think is perfect, right? You're probably not going to need more than that for a while. And then, you know, if you want to get an external drive, like John suggests, or like Leander suggests, and just live with the 256 gigabytes of flash storage, you'll probably be really happy, especially with USB 3, right? Because USB 3 is almost as fast as FireWire 800. Do you guys know if that's what I'm saying is right? I think it's almost as fast, but not quite as fast.
Yeah, and of course Thunderbolt also like blows it out of the water, but like that's Thunderbolt true. Drives, you know, you'll have to sell a kidney for.
I know. See, that's like my other thing. When people make the point about the Thunderbolt drives, John, is like Thunderbolt really isn't a consumer level product yet. I feel like it's a much more professional product, you know, line. Anything with Thunderbolt on it does cost a lot of money because you're getting that super fast, you know, I/O. And I haven't really seen anything compelling for consumers that has been released yet. Everything that I've seen is like, oh, you want a hard drive? Hey, it's $700.
I think it's going to be the next FireWire, where it's just like, you know, a bunch of, you know, professionals and like neckbeards really, really love it. But, you know, while like USB walks all over it, You know, I mean, the prices are just too insane for Thunder. I mean, it's awesome technology, but, you know, I mean, whatever. I could be very well wrong. But
well, you
like,
know, I kind of agree with you, actually. And I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday. I mean, USB 3 is going to be a lot less expensive. Let's just face it. It already is. And it's coming down in price already. And there's already a ton of peripherals that you can buy with USB 3. Plus, you know, you have the advantage of, you know, everyone with a PC uses USB 3 now. So, you know, it's just going to bring the cost down in that sense just because of all the people using it. And then Thunderbolt, it's like, it's really like one of those super fast specialty, you know, IOs that not a lot of PCs have that I've seen. And I think you're right. Like, we may kind of see it end up as the next FireWire 800, which would be fine. I mean, if not everyone needs it, as long as you have need for it, if you could use it. But it's like, geez, you know, you're getting two FireWire ports on your Mac. It would kind of suck to get that and then not ever use them.
Right.
Let's, you know, move I think on.
Go ahead, John.
You know, I think that about Thunderbolt is like, there's like, if you actually think about it, like, there's only really one thing that's cool to consumers about Thunderbolt, which is daisy chaining. Like, that's it. And like, that's pretty cool, but like, you know, the only reason you have to daisy chain Thunderbolt is because you've got one port, whereas you know, might have on your computer like four or six USB ports. So it's kind of like, I just don't see it happening. Like, it's a professional, it's really a cool spec, but I just don't see it catching on, especially when it costs so much.
Right. Well, I kind of feel like the new MacBook Pro with Retina display is kind of a stopgap. I think Johnny Ive even said that in his MacBook Pro video on Apple's website. It's just one of those machines that has such cutting edge technology in it that it may not become, everything on it may not become, you know, standard use for another year and a half. So you're paying for that technology, you know, right off the bat, and you may not use all of it, but hey, at least you'll be ready for the future. I'm going to stick with my 2010 MacBook Pro for now, and I might take that extra money I was going to spend and buy a new lens for my Canon. Let's talk about some of the other MacBooks or some of the other Macs. The MacBook Airs got updated, right? Nothing exciting there. You get a new 720p FaceTime HD camera, faster graphics, faster processor. The iMac did not get updated. And I know this was kind of a little controversial, especially for you, Buster, because you really wanted a new iMac. And yeah. I think it was Tim Cook had said something that kind of alluded to the fact that it might be updated in 2013. And then later Apple's press team said, no, he was only talking about the Mac Pro. So right. Do you guys think that we're going to see a new iMac sometime soon? Does anyone have any new information on this?
Well, there should be at least a spec bump pretty soon because all the Ivy Bridge processors are coming out. And it's been 400 days since the iMac was last upgraded by any means. So I would expect there to at least be a spec upgrade sometime this year.
What about Retina display on that, Buster? Any opinions on that?
I don't know if that'll happen this year or maybe next year.
I'm kind of thinking it'll be next year too. I mean, just seeing as the Retina display MacBook is so expensive, and that's just a 15-inch screen. Imagine how much it would cost for them to put a freaking 27-inch Retina display.
Yeah, right. It's going to be pricey. Yeah.
And let's talk Mac Pros. So Apple did a minor spec update on these, and they basically just got new processors. They still have USB 2. They still don't have Thunderbolt. They still are using Bluetooth 2.1. I mean, everything about them is old still. And they marked their Mac Pros on their website as new, and everyone got super pissed. And then they removed that new icon. What do you guys think is going on with the Mac Pros? I mean, we were expecting an update. We hardly got one. What is Apple thinking? John, any opinions?
Well, I think that, like, I mean, basically what happened with the Mac Pros, it seems like, is the server, as I understand it, the server class Ivy Bridge processors that they were going to use for it, like, got bumped at the last minute. And it had been, like, what has it been, like, two and a half years since an update? Like, they had to get something out because, I mean, I've been writing stories for at least the last year about, is the Mac Pro dead? So you know, if Apple didn't actually want to abandon it, they needed to release some sort of upgrade to it. And I think that, you know, it was kind of I feel like they're probably very disappointed with it, and it was a compromise all around. You know, but they had to have something as a stopgap, and so, you know, we got what we got.
Right. We got them putting a new tag on it on their website and then pulling it.
No, Steve Jobs would never go for that, right?
You know, you mean some putting up the new tag or pulling it down?
Just putting out a compromised product, putting out something just for the sake of
something half-assed.
Hmm.
I don't know. I think there were plenty of half-assed products released by Apple under Steve Jobs's like watch.
Well, that's true, but it was just so I don't know. There was just really no update to the Mac Pro, you know.
I think that. Go on.
I'm sorry, Buster. Could you repeat what you said? I didn't catch it.
I was just saying there really wasn't anything new about the Mac Pro. I don't know. It was really weird for Apple to do that, and then also really weird for them to come out and say, "Yeah, we're going to be releasing a new one in 2013."
That really was strange.
It was really strange to talk
about that at all. But John, what were you going to say?
Well, I mean, actually, I just want to address that. That is totally weird. Like the Apple indicating that a future product is coming, like sometime soon. Like they never do that. Like that
really don't. Yeah. I mean, Tim Cook seems to be taking a lot of liberties. I mean, he's running Apple as he would, you know, run Apple, you know, what I just said made no sense. he's running Apple, you know, and doing whatever he wants, it seems like. Like, he's not constricted by the rules and, you know, value set by Steve Jobs, it feels like to me. Like, he's just kind of running Apple however he wants, and there's been some, I think, like, you know, tongue snafus, if you will, where he says things and you're like, whoa, Steve Jobs would never have said that.
Well, I don't think that that's a snafu. Like, I think that was, I mean, it wasn't just Tim Cook. Like, there was another executive who also said it. I don't think that's a snafu. I think that, like, they're signaling that, you know, yes, they know that this is disappointing, like, and that, but I think they're also trying to signal to professionals that they're not abandoning them, like, that this does not indicate that they're not interested. And that's really important, because, like, if you actually think about how the Mac got its foothold, it was all from professionals. It was all from having, like, you know, the best displays, and, you know, the professionals who take on a platform and make it their own, they make cool products. It all trickles down. If Apple doesn't release a new Mac Pro, if they don't signal that they're still treating professionals seriously, then professionals might go to somewhere else. And if that happens, less cool things get made for the Mac, for the iPhone, for the iPad. You know, it's sort of like OS X sort of loses its heart. And I think I think it's really important that they signaled this. I don't think it was a snafu at all.
That's a really good point, actually, because that had been something a lot of us have been thinking. We're like, is Apple leaving behind the pros, right? I mean, especially after Final Cut Pro X, it's like everyone was like, what's going on here? You know, and Apple killed off Xserve. They haven't updated the Mac Pros in a long time. So are you kind of saying that it was an intentional comment, John, that they were like, hey, it's coming, like, we're working on it, it's just not here yet?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Tim Cook's not going to actually say something like that, but, you know, he might say confidentially to somebody that, you know, there are better Mac Pros coming in 2013. And, you know, the effect is the same. It's like pros read that and they're like, oh, okay, you know, these might be disappointing, but we're not being abandoned. And in conjunction with the new MacBook Pros, which are absolutely a professional class machine, like, I think that, you know, the message has been sent by Apple that, no, they're not going to become like a casual consumer only company, like, that they still really hold pros and in a very high regard.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the next Mac Pros, I think they're working on something, obviously, and it kind of seemed like maybe they were trying to have them ready for WWDC and they just couldn't get them ready in time. And now they're like, hey, wink, wink, like, here's a small update in case you really need something now. And then in the future, we're going to give you something amazing. I think the next Mac Pro is going to truly be something to behold, if you will.
I will.
Thank you. Thank you, finally. well, that pretty much covers hardware. Let's move on to Mountain Lion. And let me just start by saying, Craig Federici, is that how you say his last name?
I don't know. Mr. Hair?
Mr. Hair. That guy has the best hairdo in tech. I'm going to say that now. God, that guy belongs on a romance novel cover.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he needs to beef up a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. He needs to have some creatine and lift some weights, bust out some push-ups. But my gosh, that guy's hairdo is fantastic. 200 new features coming to Mountain Lion. We're only going to cover a handful here, obviously, because most of them probably are not even interesting. What?
Yeah, I'm not going to do all 200. I thought we were going to whip through them.
Yeah. Actually, hey, good call. This is going to be the best seven-hour Apple conversation you hear all week long. Sorry, all week long. So feel free to jump in here at any point, guys. Especially, John, I know you've been writing a lot about this probably. So the kind of overall theme to this version of the OS is integration with iCloud, right? Like, it kind of seems like they're unifying their OSs. So iOS and OS X are gonna play together much more nicely. They're gonna interface better via iCloud. And that was one of the first things that was brought up, is this iCloud support. And they're like, we're baking it right in. It's not gonna be an addition to the operating system. It's gonna be, you know, built right in from the start. All your content is going to sync across all your devices. All your documents are going to be stored in the cloud. And actually, that was one of the big features that I want to ask you guys about. So they have this thing that they're calling Documents in the Cloud. So it kind of seems to me like this may be why they were trying to buy Dropbox, especially as they were doing the demo. They were just, you know, dragging documents into a window, and all of a sudden they're synced across all your devices. I was like, geez, that looks a lot like Dropbox. Is this something that you guys are excited about? I mean, it basically keeps all your documents synced, so no matter where you are, you can look to see your changes and all that stuff. Is this something that you think is going to be useful to people? John, let's start with you.
I mean, I guess it will be. Like, you know, I think that, I mean, for me, it's like, you know, well, I already have Dropbox, and I'm pretty integrated with that, and I don't see a lot of reason for me not to be... using Dropbox anymore, or switching over. Like, I mean, it looked great. I mean, I think a lot of these things are aimed at more casual users. I mean, and I think that, you know, part of this is part of Apple's, like, continuing quest to sort of, like, obscure the file system from people. And, you know, like, that's something that Lion started, and Mountain Lion continued, where they don't really want you thinking, you know, you as a user thinking about files, which is a really good approach for people coming to the platform from, like, iOS or iPad and stuff like that. But, you know, for somebody like me, it just gets the back of my hair up. So
I totally agree. Like, and that really is what Apple's doing. Like, they're making technology, you know, easily approachable by people who aren't really used to using technology. But for people like us, like the power users, it's aggravating sometimes, isn't it? It's like, why does it take me 10 minutes of Google searching to figure out how to find my library folder?
Right.
Yeah, but we're undergoing a big switch. You know, Steve Jobs' digital hub strategy was that the Mac was the center of your digital life. It was the machine that you plugged in your camera, your video camera, your music player into, and it was the thing that fed all these devices and made them better by, you know, importing video and turn them into little movies, and you could burn a DVD. But, you know, that era is completely gone. I mean, the Mac isn't the center of your digital life anymore. It's the cloud.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. Yeah, he's kind of moving all in there.
Pictures in the cloud. You know, it's completely moving away from the desktop. And, you know, I just started using this sort of file system on the iPad these last few days. Properly for work, and yeah, it takes a little bit of getting used to, but it actually works really well once you get it figured out. You know, like I'm using iWork.com and iDisk, mm-hmm. and it's actually really nice not to sort of, you know, there's sort of one bucket where it goes, and it's really nice to be able to have documents. Not to go searching through hierarchies of folders to find the document you want to open it up. I actually found it pretty easy and pretty intuitive to be able to open up a document in a couple of different applications and then send it on, you know, by email.
I have a feeling I'm going to be one of those old guys who are just like, oh, I want to manage everything, you know, in folders. And I do that now, right? And sometimes I feel a little embarrassed by it because I'm just like, I feel like I'm like that old guy, right, who doesn't want to change. And Apple's pushing all these new, like, you know, super slick technologies to help you manage your digital life. And I'm like, no, I just want to dump it all in a folder. Where's my folder? You hid my folder from me. Where is it?
I know exactly what you're like talking about. And I mean, I was just talking to a friend who was like telling me he's like does tech support for this like very well-known blog. And he was talking to me about how one of the writers there, since he'd been, you know, was like, you know, they had to design their entire system around this one guy, like, who was really interested in cyberpunk in the 80s. And is like, now, like, he's like, well, if I can't do it all in my, you know, Linux, you know, my Unix terminal, then if I can't do a blog post in my Unix terminal, then I'm just not interested in it. And so they've had to, like, consistently, like, spend all his money to support this, like, you know, this this one guy. I mean, I think the problem with what we're seeing in, like, part of the power user problem with this is that, like, you know, we're only seeing part of what Apple envisions. You know, one of the big things that frustrates people about not seeing files is not because we have any interest in seeing files, but because that makes it so much harder to use files across multiple programs. And where we really get frustrated on the iOS side of things is, you know, there's no way to, unless the app developers have specifically programmed that specific connection, there's no way to say, I want to take this photo from Facebook and put it into Instagram in just one click. You know, you can't save the file to your hard drive and then put it up there. I mean, actually, that's a bad example, but, like, you know, you can't take an MP3 file and save it to your device and then put it up on through your SoundCloud app. You just, you know, it's something you can't do. And I think that what Apple eventually envisions is some sort of services on iOS that allows apps to talk to each other and to make these sort of transactions. But since that's not there now, I think it's very frustrating to power users who are like, well, why can't I see my iOS file system?
Yeah, and it can be kind of disjointing too. I mean, like, especially with the whole documents thing. And, like, let's say you're working on a document and Apple is saving your changes and you can use the time machine functionality to go back through versions. It's like, well, what if I just want to save as and then start on this, you know, thing that's been saved brand new as a different file? It's like, I can't save it as a new file anymore. Now I have to figure out what the hell to do. I'm like, do I create a duplicate and rename it? Like they make these changes, but I don't really feel like there's a good way to figure out how those changes really operate.
Well, guess what, Erfan? Prepare to be excited because Save As is returning in Mountain
Oh, Edition. Thank God.
However, you will have to remember a very obscure keystroke that will never be.
It's going to be Control Option X Spacebar to Save As.
That's not far off.
Well, let's keep moving through some of the new functionality of Mountain Lion, and this one is going to be super exciting. So we're getting a new Reminders app, which, you know, may not excite most people, but the Reminders functionality in Snow Leopard right now is crap. It lives in Mail, it lives in iCal, and it never works right. It doesn't look good. So you're going to get your own Reminders app on your Mac, which is long overdue. You're going to get a new Notes app, so no longer will your notes live in Mail, which seemed like a totally strange place for them to live to me. So you'll get your very own Notes app,
wasn't it?
What's that?
That was all because of WebDAV, because it was they wanted to synchronize and they were using WebDAV technology.
I think you're right. Yeah, so they're kind of moving everything into iCloud now, so they can all intersync with each other. Oh my gosh, this is probably my second favorite one. You're gonna get a new Messages app, right? And let's talk a little bit about this. Have you guys all been using the Messages app beta?
Not a ton, but a little bit.
John, you've been using it, right? Because I noticed you've been writing about it.
Yeah, I used it a little bit. I mean, I'm kind of an Adium man, so, you know, Apple's... I mean, this is actually the first thing that's really got me seriously considering using, like, an Apple message program on my Mac. Like, I mean, iChat, I think, is just terrible. You know...
Oh, really, I did too, yeah.
It really irritates me. This is great. You know, it'll be better once Apple figures out how to, I mean, right now, like if you get a message one place, or if you're on your iPhone and you're like iMessaging your girlfriend 80 or 90 times and like some hot torrid exchange, like then you go back to your Mac and then it all pops up and you're, you know, when you're showing your mother your picture of your new puppies or something. And it's like, you know, and Apple needs to resolve that because it's, you know, it's just irritating and stupid, and there's no reason they shouldn't be able to figure out when you've read something. But I think that's coming. I think they're, you know, they're figuring that out.
I think you're right. I think actually Alex wrote a piece about how they're also going to be unifying your Apple ID with your phone number, which was a major problem with messages or with iMessage, because I mean, you'll send something from your computer and it will show up on your friend's phone as, you know, your email address. Well, then you go back to your phone and you send it from your phone and it shows up as your phone number. And so they never really knew, especially if they didn't know your email address, like who this was coming from, and the messages would show up in different threads. And so they're unifying that. So no matter where you send a message from, it shows up on all your devices, first of all, which it wasn't always doing before. And it shows up as you on your friend's device, which of course is incredibly helpful when you're trying to communicate with somebody. And also I'm sure they're going to fix the random notification icons that would show up on iMessage all the time. It would on my little icon in my dock, it would show like I had 4 new messages and I'd go click it and there's nothing there. And then I'd try to close it and it's like, do you want to view your new messages? And I'm like, yes. And it would show me nothing. So hopefully they fixed that, because Messages has been probably my favorite app so far that Apple's released. It's incredibly useful to be able to group text, all your friends at one time, if they have an iDevice, of course. So I'm excited about that. My top most exciting feature, to me at least, is the Notification Center. So they're bringing notifications into the new OS, and it's basically going to be like Growl. Did you guys use Growl ever?
I use Growl.
Oh, okay. So the new Growl, when it became paid, it used to work really well. And we've talked about this on the show before. It became a total turd. It stopped working, and I could never get it to actually function correctly. And if you read the reviews in the Mac App Store, I'm not the only one. Everyone's pissed about this. So I'm really happy that you're finally going to have a place where all your notifications on your Mac live. Because of course, before, every application was responsible for its own notifications, which was not a good experience, and you're always getting all these weird notifications everywhere. So now you have a place for all these notifications to live. And John, you wrote a piece recently about how all your notifications are going to be synced across all your devices, right?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
That sounds like something I wrote.
Yeah, I mean, I do write a lot of pieces. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, let me tell you what you wrote, because I really liked it. And this was a problem that I didn't even realize I was having, but frustrated you obviously more than me, even though you don't recall.
So, now I recall, but still tell everybody.
Okay, so basically the problem was you'd view a notification on your iPhone, you'd clear it out, and then you'd go to your iPad, and it's still there because the devices weren't communicating with each other. So now it seems, thank you, John, that Apple has fixed this problem, so all your notifications will be unified and synced across all your devices. So, you know, if you see a notification in one place on your Mac, on your iPhone, it goes away at all the other places. So it saves you a lot of time and just kind of like going through your notifications and being like, which ones of these have I already seen? Which I think is cool. And it's, you know, just yet more proof that Apple is really kind of melding all of these OSs together so that they work really well.
Well, I think it also shows how Apple is consistently like making iCloud, you know, kind of the central nervous system of everything they do. Because, like, I mean, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but like for Apple to do that, they need to switch from the way they're currently doing push notifications to essentially doing it all through the iCloud and syncing the state between iCloud. And I mean, that's actually a fairly big move that very few people will actually notice.
You know, I think that's a good point, and we could have a whole conversation about this. John, your CNN piece that you recently wrote about Apple's secret weapon kind of touched on this a little bit, and that's just about how Apple is able to, like, you know, dream up these features and then actually execute on them. And I feel like this is really one of those areas where Apple has done that well, because a lot of companies would dream up a feature like this And I feel like this is something that Sony does all the time. And they're like, hey, we have these cool features and you can buy these devices and these features will work together. But they're not executed well. And Apple executes these things so well that they just work flawlessly and they make you want to use them. Whereas on other, you know, devices from other manufacturers, you may not even know they exist. That's an aside. And let's not go there. But let's talk about dictation, actually. That's coming to the new OS. And is this something that you guys think you're going to use? John, are you going to speak to your computer while you're smoking your pipe?
No.
Dearest computer.
So it can be like dear Leander. Yeah.
Comma.
No, I don't think so. Also, I always have like two hyperactive parakeets at all times. Like,
can I just say that I love that you have two parakeets at all? Not one, two.
Two parakeets. Like, you know, I can't do it. And also, like, I mean, I can type faster than I can speak. It's not useful to me, but like, it's great for people who are less comfortable with a keyboard. It's great for accessibility, for the blind, all sorts of. I mean, that's fantastic news for people who used to have to spend like a few hundred bucks on Dragon just for this dictation stuff. I mean, and you know, dictation actually works pretty well.
It does, unless it's communicating with Siri. In which case, its usability drops by at least 50%. Leander, what do you think about dictation?
Yeah, you know, even with my wonderful accent, it actually works pretty well. And I started using it more and more, especially now that I'm all iPad.
Right. That explains your email.
Yeah, right. Well, it's strange. I only, you know how you were talking earlier about your workflows, how you get stuck in your ways, and I'd forgotten completely that it was available on the iPad. But so I do it on my iPhone a little bit when I'm doing texts, but I haven't yet transferred that to doing, you know, stuff like email. But now you've reminded me, I'm going to start doing it tomorrow. But the dictation does work really well.
You know, am I the only one who spaces out? Like, as soon as Siri is like ready for me to speak, and I'm like, I'm not even sure what I'm trying to say here. Does that happen to you guys? It happens to me all the time. Like, as soon as she, like, I hear the doo-doo, I'm like, I just totally go blank. I'm like, I could type this really fast and I would say exactly what I wanted, but as soon as I have to speak it, I just have a total blank. I don't know what to say.
It might be the sexy voice, well, but I always like put on the spot. So it's like Siri's like, what, you know, like what, you know, Siri, the beep comes up and I'm like, yeah.
Siri has transcribed that exact word for me too many times. Let's kind of cruise through the rest of these features because we still have iOS 6 to talk about. And these are all great, I thought. So system-wide sharing, which I thought was really cool. So they're integrating this into the OS. So you can, from preview, you know, from anywhere you can quick look, instantly share to Twitter, Facebook, Flickr. They're actually adding this sharing into the Notification Center too. So you can send a quick tweet or a quick Facebook status update right from Notification Center. Really excited about this. You know, another small aside, I feel like Apple is integrating in a lot of services that you would have to use third-party software to do these kinds of things, like, you know, like Growl, like Echo Phone did really cool stuff with Twitter notifications, and now they're bringing it all into the OS, which I really love. The new Safari is going to be faster. It's going to have this kind of funky tab view where you can scroll visually through all your open tabs. I don't know how useful that would actually be. I don't know why anyone would want that, but...
Well, how useful is Safari? Like, I mean, no one uses it.
I know. I stopped using it, too. Let's hope they fix the memory leak that's been happening for 2 years. They have a unified smart search, just like Google Chrome has had for ages. I think the big feature here that I'm really actually excited about is iCloud Tabs, which basically allows you to open your tab sessions from any of your other devices. Because honestly, how many times have you guys been reading something on your iPad and you're like, I really want to go read this on my Mac because my Mac is a proper computer and I would enjoy it more there. So, and then you have to like email yourself. Idea. What?
That's a good idea in theory, but in practice, you know, like I sometimes have like 60 tabs open in about four different windows. On three different computers, on my iPad and iPhone.
Really?
Integrating all that into one huge hairball would be a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, like, same here, like, as a professional underpants blogger, like, I've usually got, like, you know, a million tabs open, and, like, And also, like, I don't actually, like, you know, I have my work machine and I have, you know, my iPad and my iPhone. I don't want to, you know, when I'm on my iPad, I don't want to see things from work. That's not what I'm there for. And I mean, I'm sure, you know, you can shut it all off, but I don't know, it doesn't work with other browsers. It's just kind of like, I mean, it's great, but it's I think it's sort of a, you know, a marginal use scenario for, you know, a small subset of people.
Yeah, interesting, because I read on my iPad all the time, and that was like one of the top features from the keynote. I was like, wow, that is something that I need. But apparently I'm not like all of you guys.
But you said you don't use Safari, right?
I don't use Safari actually any longer. I used to use it, but I do use it occasionally for things like that, for features that it has that, you know, that Chrome just doesn't have. Let's talk about the worst named feature in all of Keynote: Power Nap.
What are you talking about?
whoever named this needs to be whipped with a bamboo stick.
No.
What are you talking about?
Clever.
Power Nap is clever. Why couldn't they call it Power Sleep? Because that's actually what your computer is doing, is sleeping.
Because it's not totally asleep, it's napping. You know, yes. Sometimes when you're napping, you're halfway awake.
I guess because I'm not a napper, I'm just like, this just sounds terrible. But I guess that's like an actual terminology that people use, right? They're like, I'm going to take a power nap.
And they go, oh, yeah.
15 minutes.
Buster, did Buddha say that about the napping? That was a profound quote, I thought.
Oh, I thought, yeah, I know. Yeah, he did. I'm a big fan of the power napper. I take one a day.
Well, let's actually explain what it is for those who actually don't know. So basically, what PowerNap does is it allows your Mac to do certain things while it's sleeping, like fetch your email, go out and grab your calendar and reminder updates. It fetches photos to your photo stream. So basically, you plug your Mac in at night, you close it, and it will do all these things for you, including downloading system updates and App Store updates, and it will even back itself up to your time capsule. It's not going to be really that useful for most people. It only works with the second-gen MacBook Airs and the MacBook Pro with Retina display. So it's not even going to work with the newly updated MacBook Pros unless it's one with the Retina display. Maybe it'll be one of those features you use a ton in the future. We're finally getting AirPlay mirroring on the Mac, so you can send video to your Apple TV very easily. And a functionality that's been missing for a while is being able to send audio from your Mac to AirPort-enabled speakers or to your Apple TV, which previously you had to do with a program called AirFoil, which cost $25 and worked
for me,
great.
For me, these are the killer features. Like, this is what I'm most excited about Mountain Lion for.
Yeah, I agree. These are really excellent features, especially the whole audio AirPlay feature for me, because before you could only do it in iTunes and you couldn't do it from any other application. So I'm really excited for this. This is yet another example of Apple, you know, kind of adding functionality that you would have previously had to pay for.
And also now you can finally watch porn on your Apple TV. Like, right. A nice little plus.
Finally. Leander somehow figured out how to do this ages ago, but that's going to be a how-to article on Cult of Mac. there's a new Game Center, which I don't even really want to devote any time to because no one actually uses Game Center that I know. Do you guys want to talk about it at all?
The what?
Game Center.
On Mac?
Yes.
I just know that the chess app is getting Game Center integration, which I'm pretty stoked for that.
Actually, we should talk about this because this is actually potentially huge. We're all completely bored by Game Center. Like, what Game Center is going to allow you to do is go head to head in games between iOS and Mac devices, right? So, if you've got a Mac and you've got trying to think of a game that's available on both the Mac and iOS, like Nova, right? You can play on your Mac with a mouse and keyboard while you're playing against somebody who's using the iPad. And there's a bunch of reasons why I think this is potentially huge. And one of these reasons is because it really gives a one-up to the Mac gaming scene. The Mac gaming scene has always been, like, just sad sack. Like, I mean, Steve Jobs didn't care about gaming at all. And, you know, so the PC got this real leg up when it came to being a gaming platform, which continues to this day. And we're starting to see that erode with things like Steam for Mac and the Mac App Store. But even now, like, all of the showcase games, they come Windows first, and then they get like a lazy Mac port by Spear Media or something.
By some drunk developer.
Yeah, exactly. And like, what this does is it's like, well, hey, guys, you know, you love all, you know, Game Center being able to communicate and game between the Mac and iOS. It encourages people who are going to develop iOS games to do it for the Mac at the same time. And it's like, hey, guys, you like, you know, the iOS App Store money? Well, why don't you just, you know, port it on over to the Mac? Get some of that as well. Like, it, I think that this could potentially be, I mean, if Apple doesn't muck it up, this could potentially be huge. Like, we could, in a few years, because of this, seriously be talking about the Mac as a gaming platform again.
Wow. Hey, here's a fun fact for you guys, thinking about Mac as a gaming platform. Did you guys know that Halo started on the Mac?
I did.
Bungie was originally a Mac gaming developer. It was called what?
It was called Marathon.
Oh,
the Marathons are like the kind of prequel games. Like those were, I mean, it's like by the same developer though. But like Halo's kind of like a sequel to the Marathon trilogy.
Wow, I'm surprised Leander had something to contribute on that.
I mean, the planet was really blocky, really bad graphics. But every now and again, the alien would pop out behind you and scare the shit out of you.
and you yell bollocks.
Exactly.
Leander, I missed having you on the show. You know, I want to talk about iOS 6. We had a lot of great features announced for iOS 6, and I thought it was really exciting. But before we do that, I want to talk to you a little bit about Discade 5. So our sponsor this week is DigiDNA, as I mentioned at the start of the show, and they make this product called Discade 5, which I've been playing with. And basically what it allows you to do is use your iPhone's file system or your iPad's file system. So you plug your iPhone in and you boot up the software, and you can view anything on it and download it to your computer. So you can download photos really easily. You can pull down music really easily. You can pull down movies really easily. You can even download your call logs, your voicemails, which I've actually had to do in the past for legal reasons and a crazy girlfriend. And it's worked really well. So if you have any reason to download stuff off your iDevice, Discade 5 makes it super simple, and it's actually free to use. They have some basic functionality built into the software that you can use for free forever. And then if you want to do some of the more advanced stuff, like downloading voicemails and stuff, then you actually have to pay for a license, but it's only $25. It's really cheap, and it works really well. I've been using it for the last week, like I said, and I really like it a lot. So check them out, digidna.net. You'll see a giant Discade 5 logo on their homepage, so it's easy to find. And if you try it, tweet at me. Let me know what you think. And that's Discade 5, digidna.net. I don't know why I can't say that URL. digidna.net, digidna.net. It's like a tongue twister, isn't it?
Digidna. No, it's
you're
not.
You're a show-off, whatever. Well, you're British. You can say things that we can't say. Let's talk about iOS 6. So tons of new features. We're going to talk about the main ones. The one that I thought that was probably the coolest. Actually, you know what? I retract that. I'm not sure if I thought this was the coolest. But we're getting new phone functionality. And one of the things you'll finally be able to do is decline a call, which you weren't able to do before, strangely. Like, you can mute it. But
I decline your calls all the time.
No, you don't. It's not even. You would if it was technically possible. Now you can actually do it. And the cool part is that they've added in some functionality where you can actually, instead of just declining it, you can choose to send them a text message automatically, and you can, with the press of a button, instantly send them a text message that's either custom or one of the boilerplate ones that Apple provides you. Do you guys think this was exciting at all, Buster?
Which one?
See, every once in a while I say your name just to bring you back into the conversation. The new phone functionality I just spent 30 seconds talking about, you know, so when you can like decline someone's call and instead of just declining it, you can send them a text message, or actually I didn't mention this. You can set up a reminder to call that person back when you leave a certain area. So if you're in your house and you're like, I don't want to talk to mother right now. You hit the button, as soon as you leave your house, it'll remind you to call her back. Leander, that'll probably be helpful for you.
Absolutely.
I set it up and I've used it. I mean, I don't know. I don't get too crazy excited about it though.
Yeah, well, you're wrong. John, what about you?
I don't care. I mean, it'll be nice to set up like ghost screw auto reply for like when Buster calls, but otherwise like
Okay, well, let's move on then. Notifications are going to be new and improved. They're going to be synced across all your devices, including with your Mac, as we talked about earlier. And this was actually a cool feature that I really liked, a do not disturb feature. Because have you guys ever been woken up by someone's frantic text message conversation and they happen to include you in this group chat? And it's 4 a.m. and you're getting text messages every 10 seconds.
Didn't that happen all through CES?
Yes, it did. And I'm like, I don't care that you're going somewhere at 7 a.m. I'm sleeping.
You're still sleeping it off.
Do you know how much I drank at the Wired party? Leave me alone. So basically
I know exactly how much we drank.
Yeah, that's right.
The opera singer and all that.
The do not disturb feature, the way it works is you turn it on and you can set times. So it will disable, the screen from lighting up and audio signals from, you know, disturbing you as you slumber drunkenly. And then it will, turn back on at a certain time that you specify. Also, it has like an emergency mode, which I thought was kind of clever. So if somebody calls you, And they really need to get a hold of you, right? So they start calling you 2-3 times. It will actually start to let those calls come through because it's obvious that it's an emergency. Really clever feature.
I like that one, but I fear that it is going to be abused. Like I don't know. Do you guys remember when you were teenagers and like every time you'd always get the busy signal when you'd call a friend's house, and you'd have to keep on calling and waiting for it. Like when I was a kid, some of my friends figured out that if you called the operator and claimed that it was an emergency, that they would break through on the line. And like, I just feel like this is the kind of thing that's going to be gamed by the irritating who are going to be like, oh, well, he might be in shutdown mode, so I'll just call 10 or 15 times.
That's actually really funny. Yeah, I remember that. And by the way, I had done that before and it worked. You call the operator and you're like, it's an emergency. Can you do emergency breakthrough? And then you'd listen as they did it. It was awesome.
And then you hang up, and if it's their dad or something, you're just like, click.
Yeah, every time I call Leander now, I'm going to instantly get back a text message that says, on my way. Even though we don't even live in the same city. You're finally going to get FaceTime over cellular, which people cheered about. And I'm like, have you seen AT&T's new family plans? Like, this is not exciting at all to me. It's just a way for the telecoms to get even more of your money.
Well actually, do you mean Verizon's new shared data plan?
Have I seen it?
No. Do you mean Verizon instead of AT&T?
Yeah. Oh, I thought AT&T released the same one practically.
Oh, I didn't see that. Maybe they did.
So Verizon released it first, and I thought that AT&T followed suit. But regardless, let's talk about Verizon's because it was super expensive, right?
Well, it actually saves you some money, but like it's not as much money as people want. I thought it was really interesting, because like. You know, you have AT&T's CEO just a couple weeks ago saying, like, oh, yeah, like, you know, pretty soon we're not going to be giving voice. You know, we're not going to be selling voice and minute plans. Like, we're just going to be going data only. And now you have Verizon actually pulling the trigger on it. Like, you have unlimited minutes, unlimited text. It's only data you're charged for and the line. And I think that that's, like, really fascinating because it shows exactly how much companies like Apple with iMessages and FaceTime have completely eroded the text and minutes scam that the whole like telecom industry had perpetrated. Like, you know, like now they have to charge for data only because that's all that matters.
And that's like, all that's ever mattered, like you said, right? I mean, like, there's no such thing as minutes. It's all data, right? I mean, they package it up so they can charge you for all these individual features.
Or text. Like text, like the way text messages operate is they like, you know, they get fit into this tiny little packet of free space that is just absolutely required to actually run telephone lines. And for years, companies like AT&T and Verizon have been basically making infinite profit. That's why, like, when you called up and complained about service, the first thing they would do is give you more text messages, because text messages are free and yet charging like 10 or 15 cents each
I
for
know.
Them.
It's outrageous. It really is outrageous. You know, I have to say though, John, I'm really outraged by the cost for the data from Verizon's new family plan, because in some instances, I think we actually even had an article on Call to Mac about this. It's actually more expensive to get their family plan than just to pay for two individual plans. And I'm just like, really? Like, you know, what was it? $50 for 1 gig of data. And then you also have to pay a per device fee. I'm like, really? That's kind of astronomical to me. Like, how can it be so expensive? But I digress.
Actually, can I respond to that for just
a second? Yeah, of course, please.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really interesting that that this is where it's going so quickly, because, like, you know, what you have are carriers like AT&T and Verizon who, like, you know, they've made a lot of money on the iPhone, but now that they have to support it and they're paying all of these, you know, huge subsidy fees, and like the iPhone is actually like breaking the bank for a lot of these companies. Like Sprint had to make like something like an $8.2 billion promise to Apple.
Yeah, Dan Hesse no longer has his testicles. That was part of the deal. He's a eunuch now.
You know, and so what you see is like Apple, like Apple's released this coveted device, and it's gotten into these carriers, and these carriers have, you know, gotten it and been great for a while, and then realized, oh, Apple is transforming us into a dumb pipe. Like, we're a dumb pipe now. And,
yes.
And this is really, like, I think this is super interesting, because, like, for the first time, there's an actual chance that the way that the mobile industry in America is set up is going to break, and it's going to break in and it's going to be more pro-consumer because of companies like Apple. Like, look at what I want to cite specifically here is like iPhones going prepaid. That's huge. Like the iPhone, the Virgin Mobile deal on the iPhone means that if you pay $500 upfront for your iPhone, you will save $1,000 over 2 years on over AT&T and Verizon. Like, that's gigantic. And you know, this is the way, you know, you pay $30 a month, you get, you know, a certain amount of minutes, unlimited text, unlimited data. And, you know, this is the way that the mobile industry works in, say, Europe is like, you know, there's no reason to get a plan. Like, here everybody gets a plan, but in Europe, you know, like, you can go to your local pay-as-you-go carrier, you know, you buy whatever phone you want up front, and then that device is yours, and then you pay like $25 or $30 for, you know, minutes and texts, and like, you know, you don't pay for when somebody calls you. You know, you only pay for the calls you make.
Or for the incoming text messages, right? Because you don't control those.
Right, exactly. You don't. And I mean, that's a huge scam here. Is like, you know, if a telemarketer, say, sends you 100 text messages, you're paying for those. And, you know, I think that, you know, what Apple is doing here is they've cut the whole knees out from underneath the telecom industry. And Verizon this week announcing these shared data plans, in which they're basically saying, no, there isn't anything anymore, such as minutes and text. We know you don't need those anymore. We know that's like a dying service. I think that's like revolutionary, very profound news that can't be ignored. Like, this is going to be a big story.
I think you made a lot of good points, and I agree. I just feel like now AT&T and Verizon are going to scramble to screw you in other ways. They're like, hey, we were screwing you on text messages, but Apple abolished that. So now we got to figure out how we're going to screw you, because now we can't screw you easily without you seeing it, obviously.
Well, how much? I mean, but the thing is, they can't screw people for too much longer, because now the iPhone is going prepaid. And yes, like, Virgin Mobile will probably always have the last generation iPhone. Like, they'll probably have an iPhone that's like 9 months old. But still, like, you know, I'm not going to sign up for Verizon again, like, because I'm paying like $110 a month for service that I can get from Virgin Mobile for like $45. You know, it's
right.
And I think that there's a lot of people like me who are going to make the jump and take the power and start taking the power away from companies like AT&T and Verizon.
Well, who does Virgin run on? Is it on Sprint?
I think it's on Sprint. Yeah,
it's on Sprint.
Yeah. So I mean, that's going to be a big factor for a lot of people, like, looking at the same issue. You know, it's like, do I have the network coverage?
Well, Sprint's network coverage is pretty good, and like the more customers they get, the better their network coverage will be. Like, it just has to grow outward, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. It shows a sea change in the industry, doesn't it? It's going to be a lot more like Europe, where the companies,
thank God,
have to start being a little bit more customer friendly.
Yeah, right, and actually giving us, you know, value for our money.
Yeah, and we owe it all to Apple.
We really do, and you know. Remember when they first released the iPhone? They tried to make a move even then. I mean, they included 200 text messages in your plan, and AT&T squashed that. I mean, because it was such a moneymaker for them. So Apple, right from the beginning, was trying to fight for the rights of the consumers, and that's one of the things I've always really liked about them, especially when they released iMessages. I was singing their praises from the rooftops. Let's move on. I want to talk about Maps. Because that was obviously a big announcement. So basically what happened is Apple dropped Google, as everyone was expecting, and they released this new Maps functionality, which I thought was beautiful. They looked really good, if not lacking some functionality that Google Maps has. And, of course, the applause came in when they said they're including churn-by-churn navigations, and they showed their navigation app, and it looked gorgeous. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, it's pretty nice. I used it on my drive yesterday, actually.
And how did it work for you, Buster?
It worked well. The route it told me to take wasn't the best one, but you know, it was still, you know, fine.
Now the navigation is powered by TomTom, and one of the interesting things I thought was included was real-time traffic rerouting depending on crowdsourced information of people who have iPhones. So if the 100,000 schmoes with iPhones in front of you get blocked by a watermelon truck that gets dumped over, there's a realistic situation for you. Your navigation will give you a little alert that says, we found another route for you, and you'll save 12 minutes if you drive this direction instead. I thought that was really cool. And of course, they included a flyover feature, so now you can, you know, go through in a 3D, you know, hyper realistic fashion over your favorite cities. John, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right, we're back. We got John Brownlee back with us. Had a little drop there. That's all right, because I was just droning on and on and on about navigation. I really loved it. And, you know, I pay for a GPS app right now. It costs, I think, $20 a year. And I'm like, what there app? You go. It's called GPS Drive, I think, and it works well.
Why don't you use something like Waze? It's free, and it has like the traffic thing as well.
Does it work well?
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Well, I'll tell you why I haven't been using it, Buster, because I didn't know about it.
Well, Apple, I think they're part of the partners that Apple is using for their
Yeah, they are. They are.
Oh, they are. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, there's another thing I can save money on. Let's talk about Passbook. At first mention, I passed this over because I thought it was boring. See what I did there? But the more I read about it, the more it actually kind of sounds cool. So Passbook is basically an application that allows developers to have all of your tickets that you get from various apps in one location, like your plane tickets, your movie passes, so on and so forth. And the cool feature is that the devs can build in like the time and stuff that your event's happening, so that when you go to the movie theater, the Passbook app will bring up your pass right on the home screen. Oh, I'm sorry, right on the lock screen, and then you just slide to unlock, and it instantly shows it wherever you need to be. Leander, is this something useful? Would you use this?
Oh, yeah. This sounds like a precursor to a lot of the, IFC, NFC, NFC functionality, which right. You can get with, you know, like NFC phones in Japan and Asia. It sounds really totally something I would use. Absolutely.
You know, one of the things that I'm curious about is using it at airports, because what are you going to bring up your boarding pass on your iPhone when you get to security, right? Like, they're not going to want to see that crap. You just smack the iPhone right out of your hand.
Well, I think, I think Leander's right that this is like the precursor to the iWallet, but I don't think it's going to, I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing it using Bluetooth 4.0, which I wrote an article, I don't know, about a month ago or so, where I basically argued that, like, NFC is not going to take off. Like, it hasn't taken off in Japan. It requires like installation in too many places. The equipment is expensive, and it just emphasizes point of sale. Like, you know, cash registers. Whereas, like, if you go into an Apple store, you can pay anywhere, and that's like the whole beauty of it. Whereas Bluetooth 4.0 is like super low powered. It has a much larger range than NFC. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we see Passbook, like, you starting to be able to, like, beam yourself in at, like, the airport using Bluetooth 4.0, which is, like, in the iPhone 4S, it's in the iPad and stuff like that. If we start seeing that, then, like, I definitely think that this is the precursor to the iWallet, where, like, sooner or later, Apple's going to be like, and now we take payments.
Yeah. Right, incrementally. Yeah, that's a great point. I'm really excited about Passbook too. Like I said, when I first saw it, I was like, this looks really boring, but I actually could see it being really useful, especially for the fact that it brings up your passes when you get to your event. I'm like, oh, wow, that's really a novel idea.
Mm-hmm. Right. There was a lot of clever stuff like that, I thought, using the geolocation stuff. We're seeing more and more of it. The other example was the telephone reminder in Reminders too.
You mean when you're like, I'm going to leave this place, remind me to call my mother?
Yeah. I played around a little bit. It actually really gets really annoying really quickly because, I had an alert set up to pick up the milk at Safeway, mm-hmm. and it would go off when I was in the car, and then, of course, I couldn't turn it off, and I would always forget. So every time I went past Safeway, the phone would go nuts. I guess if you're not as silly as I am, then you could probably use it properly. But I think it's really clever seeing all this stuff being built into the OS now.
I do too,
and it really makes good use of mobile and the hardware.
It's really exciting. Let's talk about Safari for just a brief moment. We're getting offline reading lists, so it will download and cache the stories that you want to save, so you can read them later. You're getting iCloud tabs, of course. You're going to be able to upload photos from Safari to your favorite websites, which is something that was impossible to do before. And they're going to be releasing this thing, or they're going to be including functionality called Smart Banners, which basically means if you go to a website, let's say you go to Yelp, and Yelp, of course, has an iPhone app. When you get to that site, it will pop up a little banner at the top that says you can download this app. That way you don't need to view it in Safari like a loser. And then you press the little button, and it takes you to the App Store, and you can download the app. And then once you load the app, it picks up right where you left off. Intelligence. I'm not really sure how useful that would be to me, but it's a cool feature. Let's talk about Siri. Siri's getting smarter. Let's hope that her ears are becoming more fine-tuned. She's going to be able to do sports scores now. So finally, I can ask Siri what the soccer scores are.
or I can ask Siri soccer. What is soccer.
Or I can ask why do people like soccer. I just offended half our audience. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to all our European listeners. I love
it. Yeah, 2012. Are you mad?
I love it. Now you can ask her about all these sports scores and she can give you answers. You can ask her about movies, which I thought was really cool. So you can ask her to find you movies, you know, that star Tom Cruise, because you're such a huge Tom Cruise fan, John. And you could ask it to give you movie times, and she'll, of course, deliver theaters near you with movie times. And the last bit of functionality that I actually was excited about was she can launch apps, finally. So you could say, launch my Spotify app, and she can actually do that for you.
Yeah, I have a question for you. Are you guys excited about this because you're drivers?
No, I'm excited about it because I have so many apps on my iPhone now, and the folder structure is so broken. I have 8 games folders that the only way for me to actually find anything now is just to use search. I just scroll to the right and type it in and then bring it up. So if I could just ask Siri to launch it, that actually might be useful.
But do you use all of those apps that you have?
No.
Maybe it's time to clean house and stop being a hoarder.
I like being a hoarder. It makes me feel safe.
I don't know. You sound like you're not a gamer, Buster. If you're a gamer, you know you never delete a game because like there could be this strange whim that
Thank
one day
you. Will be yes, there could be out. That moment on a plane where you're like, I really want to try the 10 games that I've downloaded and have yet to play. And then you cruise through all of them. So, I probably do need to get rid of a ton of stuff on my iPhone, but until that day.
I find it really hard to clear out apps that you don't use. Because there may be a time when you are gonna want to use it.
I cannot agree with you more. But they do need to update the folder structure. I mean, only being able to put 12 games on your iPhone in an iPhone folder is ridiculous. Like, why do I need to have 6 games folders? Stupid.
You should jailbreak infinite folders. That's the tweak. It's great. You can shove as many apps into a folder as you want.
Oh man, that's actually one of the reasons why I would want a jailbreak. This was kind of surprising. So they're bringing Siri into the car. So a number of manufacturers have committed to adding a Siri button in the car, and that those are like BMW, GM, Mercedes, Land Rover, Jaguar, Audi, Toyota, Chrysler, Honda. I'm sure there'll be more. And they're going to be doing that over the next 12 months. And the cool thing is, I thought was smart, is they're calling it eyes-free instead of hands-free functionality, because when you press the Siri button, the phone doesn't actually light up, so you don't use it. But this is going to be worlds better than most, you know, auto manufacturer, you know, GPS systems and I guess just technology systems that they include, right? Because they're always so ugly, aren't they? Like the nav systems and like the auto voice functionality systems that they include look like crap. They sound like crap. They work like crap.
It's pretty huge that they've given over their telemetrics to Apple, because at CES in January, we saw a bunch of telemetric systems from people like Mercedes and Cadillac had one that they're trying to make a big deal of. And like you say, they were ugly and they weren't easy to use. But Panasonic, a lot of their sort of third-party head unit makers, aftermarket head unit makers, They were much more interested in iPhone and Android integration, because I think they recognize that people have these devices already and they're not going to switch over, and they'd rather make use of them. So it's kind of interesting that the auto manufacturers are also sort of wising up to that.
Well, I think it's I'm not a driver, but I sort of am interested in this from the perspective of what you said earlier, Leander, where you're like, well, Steve Jobs' vision was to make the Mac the center of everything. So you plug your camera into it. And I think we're increasingly coming to the age where like the iPhone is becoming that, where it's you plug your car into the iPhone.
Right. Exactly. The car is like a big dock, iPhone dock. It's the biggest iPhone accessory you can buy.
That's really funny. You know, I totally agree. And the iPhone does these things so well, and the auto manufacturers especially do them so poorly, that it really seems like a perfect partnership. So I'm really excited about this.
The auto industry is funny because they're so obsessed with safety, and they can get sued. So or a recall could be so damaging. So they this is one of the reasons why the in-cabin technology is so bad. It's because they can't take a risk on something that might turn out to be a disaster. So
that's an interesting point. So now they can just move liability to Apple.
it's interesting that's a good point. It's interesting because, like, you know, considering that this functionality is going to debut in iOS 6, which is basically has this whole new maps interface, which is like very, very beta. I wonder exactly how much liability there will be when people ask Siri, you know, in their Jaguar for directions and they get like directed off a pier or whatever.
And they never thought to stop because Siri didn't tell them to. Why would you do anything on your own?
Poke had a post about his Honda Fit, which apparently he says has a great GPS system that does takes voice commands and works really, really well, flawlessly, in fact. So if Honda can build one, let's hope Siri can work too.
let us hope. Let's talk about PhotoStream for a moment. So PhotoStream has been updated in iOS 6, and I really like what they're doing here. So they're making it really easy to share photos with other family members, and this is something that I've it's been a challenge for me, you know, especially when you're trying to share photos with your mom, with people who aren't technical. You're like, how do I get them from my iPhone to their iPad? So basically what PhotoStream is going to let you to do is create an album that you can share with people in your address book. And you can share movies and videos up to 100 gigs, and it just shows up in their, I think, iPhoto or their PhotoStream. I'm actually not sure which. But it makes it incredibly easy for them to view the photos you're trying to share with them. And that's going to make my life a lot easier because I'm constantly sharing photos with my mom. And unless something's very, very basic or very easy to do, she just has a hard time with it. You know, the iPad's her first computer, honestly. And it's actually really cool. I mean, I never really thought I'd be able to text message with my mom or anything like that. She doesn't have a cell phone. And having her have an iPad has allowed me to communicate with her in ways I never thought possible. And this is just going to be another way in which I'll be able to share my life with her. And you know, moms, they always want to know what you're doing, right? And they want to see your pictures and all that stuff. So this will be really cool. Moms everywhere will love this.
I think PhotoStream is like one of the killer features of iOS 5. Like, you know, I take a lot of pictures with my phone, and like, I really love never having to worry about like, is it synced? Like, you know, like I love being able to just call it up and send it off. And I think that like the photo sharing thing is great. Like, especially as like a nod to all of the people who were really upset when MobileMe went under and they lost their photo gallery stuff. You know, now you can just do it all in PhotoStream, and that's kind of a concession to one of the few features that Apple hadn't directly copied over to iCloud.
That's interesting. You know, I never really found PhotoStream to be that useful, actually, and this is like probably one of the first functionalities that they've added where I'm like, oh, I actually might start using this. Just because having the photos on both devices, I guess, I've never really found a need for it. John, when do you find yourself using it the most?
I think a lot of times, like when, you know, for example, like if I take pictures with my SLR and like I load them up onto my iMac, and then, you know, I can then open up my iPhone later and like fool around with it in Snapseed or push it up to Instagram or whatever. I'm no longer limited because of PhotoStream. I'm not as limited to just the photos I take on my phone or load onto my phone. And I think it's also, you know, and if you had like, say, what are they called? The iFi cards or one of these like Wi-Fi cards that like automatically, Wi-Fi SD cards that automatically syncs the photos in your camera to like, through any open access point, I could see this being like really, really useful, and basically like, you know, something that works completely seamlessly and invisibly in the background. I haven't tried that, but you know, I just think it's neat. Like, I mean, I use it all the time. You know, it means that, you know, I used to sync my photo library, you know, the multiple gigs of it or whatever, to my iPhone. Now I don't have to.
Huh, interesting. I guess you must use iPhoto a lot, right?
I do. And I know you probably use like Aperture.
Yeah, see, that's, I don't even use Aperture. I use Adobe Lightroom because it's a better photo editing product. Well, I should say it's a better photo management product than Aperture. They both edit very well. It sucks, you know, like when you use products from other companies that work really well, maybe even better than the Apple products do, you lose that iCloud functionality. And it's really kind of a bummer because I would love to just to do what you just said. Like, I upload my photos or I put my photos on my computer and then they're available on my iPhone, on my iPad, because right now I have no easy way to do that because I'm using Lightroom. So I lose that functionality, but Lightroom is a better editing tool. So it's kind of like this, what should I be using? And it creates a whole lot of headache for me, and I just cry about it in the corner in my room. Let's wrap up with mail. So mail's getting VIPs. You'll have a VIP folder, so you can mark people as VIPs, and their emails will show up in those folders. They also get a little star next to their emails, which is cute. And then you're going to get a pull to refresh function, so now you can refresh your email just like you've been doing in every single other app that needs anything that has to be refreshed. And you're going to get a flagged mailbox folder. I'm sorry. That's the Department of Redundancy department, John. You're going to get a flagged mail. I loved that, by the way. You're going to get a flagged mailbox. So anything that you flag shows up there. And then one of the big features that I think people have been asking for is it's going to be easy to insert photos right from the Compose window in mail. You'll no longer have to go into your Photos app or do anything weird to send a photo to your grandmama. And that's it, guys. Actually, there's a lot more, but we're at an hour and a half, and I think that's a great place to stop. That's pretty much everything major that Apple released.
We didn't even talk about Tim Cook or the other lieutenants and his performance or the fact that, I mean, there was a bunch of stuff here. You know, people say they're worried about Apple without Steve Jobs and, you know, can the company survive? And even though there was no big breakthrough product here, you know, nothing brand new like the iPhone or the iPad, these are some really, really solid updates, I think, to the product line.
I do too. You know, that's actually a great point. Let's talk a little bit about that before we wrap up. I want to hear what your guys' opinion on it, what you thought of the WWDC keynote as a whole. You know, whether you thought it was good, bad. And Leander, why don't we start with you since you were just kind of alluding to what you're thinking. So, I mean, overall, how did you think it went?
I thought, you know, the hits kept coming. It didn't have that same magic. You don't get that. You know, I remember seeing Jobs do the iPhone back in 2007, and there was a definite sense of, like, this is going to be historic. You can feel in the air, you know, the electricity, that it was going to be a big deal. But I've seen, you know, Jobs go through very pedestrian updates to iTunes and, you know, introducing software. He was always really into it, though. You know, his enthusiasm was so infectious. You know, he was really, really delighted by all this stuff, even stuff that was really quite mundane. But so he's such a tough act to follow that they're never going to be able to live up to that kind of excitement. But I thought there was a whole bunch of really, 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 really solid stuff. And it was, you know, and adding up to it, I'm super excited about all these things they're coming out with.
Buster.
I thought it was a good I thought it was a good keynote. It was entertaining throughout. The hair guy was really awesome.
Dude, that guy's hair is out of control. I want that hairdo.
Maybe you can buy it somewhere.
My God, I'm not paid enough to afford that hair.
Make an app, you know, do some kind of.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, Chia Pet should do an app. Yeah.
Buster, anything else to add before we move to John?
Not really. I mean, okay. It was good. I felt like it was just solid, you know.
Solid. I hope you did a fist pump when you said that.
Oh, I totally did.
Okay, good. John?
I thought it was good. I thought it was really long.
It was long. It went longer than normal, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it was close to 2 hours. You know, usually Apple is able to wrap this up in 60 or even 90 minutes. And, you know, it reminded me, like, you know, a lot of people are always like, you know, this would never have happened under Steve Jobs about, like, various things. And, like, for me, the length of the keynote, like, I wasn't sure if it was one of those. Because, like, do you guys remember in Walter Isaacson's biography, Steve Jobs, they talk about, like, when, I forget what the name of the current Apple CEO at the time was, but Steve Jobs gets, like, dragged on stage for some Macworld, and it's, like, this, like, interminable, like, 2.5 hour presentation.
Gillamania.
Yeah, like, and I was kind of like, you know, I kind of felt that way about this one at points where I was just like, and I'm not sure if, I mean, it wasn't boring, but, you know, I was still like, this is really not taught, you know, like, this is very long to keep people's attention, and I ended up, I'm not sure if that's because of anything having changed in the way keynotes are delivered, or if it's just a reflection of exactly how many fingers and how many pies Apple has right now, you know, like, I mean, this is just like 1/4 of the stuff that they'll probably announce this year.
Right. Yeah. So,
like, the other thing is, I guess it's not particularly keynote related, but I did want to talk about it just a little bit. Like, I don't really. So they're calling the new Retina MacBook Pros the next gen MacBook Pro. Is like that was what was up on the slide, wasn't it?
It was on the slide, but then, you know, they just start on the website. It's just MacBook Pro with Retina display.
Yeah, that's what I thought they were calling it too.
I'm seeing, like, you know, between this and the new iPad, like, I'm seeing kind of personally, I feel like there's a degree of confusion in exactly how to reveal these products. You know, like, I mean, I can understand with, you know, a product like the iPad or, you know, the iPad comes out every year and, you know, the bottom line is that soon enough, we're no longer going to see major hardware improvements every generation. Like, they're bottoming out on what they can do. But I think that, like, with the MacBook Pro, it's just like, it, you know, Apple is like saying in the keynote it's called one thing. They're saying on their website it's called something else. And like, it doesn't really make sense, because what they should have done was taken the existing, like the old model MacBook Pro that they're still releasing, and just called it a MacBook. Like, you know?
Right.
I mean, they've done that before with the 13-inch MacBook Pro, you know? And it's just like, look, that's the old product. Just make it a MacBook. You have an opening there. And call the next-gen MacBook Pro the MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, you know, I really love the keynote. I agree with you, John. I think it did run long, but I think it has more to do with the fact that they do have so much going on right now. I mean, they just have so many products.
This podcast ran longer than the keynote, didn't it?
Barely.
No, it's not. No, we're still ahead of the keynote. Like, that was a 2-hour keynote. This has been like an hour and a half.
Yeah, so anyway, before I was interrupted by Leander, I really had a great time. I tweeted after it was over, I think I need a cigarette. It was just nonstop action for me. I was like, woo, 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 just cheering. And lots of cool stuff to announce. And I think exciting for the next 12 months, because we've only touched on some of the things that are coming out. You know, we're going to get a new iOS in fall. The next version of OS X is coming out in July. And there's going to be so much more to talk about. And we'll be there, of course, to cover it all and give you all the juicy stuff that you like to hear. But we're out of time for today, guys. That's it. This has been the longest cult cast in our short history. I want to thank DigiDNA for their sponsorship. Go check out Discade 5, digidna.net, DIGI.net. Well, I'm sorry. There we go. I did it again. DIGIDNA.net. I swear, I'm going to get that right one of these days. Hey, you know, the banter continues on Twitter. We have a great time interacting with all of you listeners and talking about everything Apple. And if you want some clever tweets, I'm going to be honest, you should be following John. And he's Dr. Crypt. I'm not sure what that means. It's just D-R-C-R-Y-P-T, right, John?
Well, no, you left out two letters. D-R-C-R-Y-P-T.
Well, as you can tell, I like to do that with URLs, too. And Buster is just B-S-T-3-R. Leander is L-Kaney, K-A-H-N-E-Y. I'm at Airfon, E-R-F-O-N. And, of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos, go check out Cult of Mac on Twitter. And we will be back next Thursday with an all-new episode that will be much shorter. Cultcast is the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. Thanks for listening. We will see you guys next time.
Best 30-minute conversation. Eh?
Yeah, right. People are like, dude, you never go 30 minutes. I'm like, I know that.
Well, just tell people that was three consecutive best 30-minute conversations.
Yeah, episode 20, 21, and 22. So, Leander, how much longer are you in Paris for?
Till the 22nd.
And then what are you guys going to...
Then we're going to London.
Oh, you're going to London to go see Alex Caney?
See what?
Isn't your brother live in London?
It's in San Francisco.
No, he lives in San Francisco now.
Oh, bollocks. So what are you guys going to do in London?
Drink a lot of beer and get into fights at soccer matches.
Cool. So it's going to be a whole family vacation experience, huh?
It is, yeah. Well, we go to the Tower of London and Tower Bridge and, you know, do the whole thing.
Wow. And then where after London are you guys going?
Barcelona. Oh, back to Paris, then Barcelona.
I think you mean Barcelona.
You're right. I know, yeah, exactly. Barcelona. And then Madrid and Granada.
I'm so envious. Can I tell you a quick fun story about Barcelona? So I was there in 2010, and Charlie, our reviews editor, for those who are listening, lives in Barcelona. So I was relaying this story to him because while I was there, they have this old Gothic district that's filled with old churches and very narrow alleyways and walkways and stuff. And we were watching this street performance, and there's this really amazing, like Spanish almost Kenny G type character playing his alto sax, and I love the sax, and I was so into it. And there was a huge crowd around us, and about 30 minutes into the performance, all of a sudden this totally nude man walks across between us and the performers, and everyone just starts laughing hysterically because, like, he's just so nonchalant. Like, he wasn't streaking or running or moving quickly in any way. He was just going for a stroll. He was just walking across slowly, totally naked. And I didn't say anything about this for the longest time, and I was telling Charlie about it, and I guess there were two naked guys that lived in Barcelona for 2 years, and they would just walk around Barcelona absolutely nude.
I was going to say, that's a normal occurrence in San Francisco every day. So an eyelid.
When you see a naked man.
Irfan, you said there were two naked men. Who
I guess so.
Barcelona?
That's what Charlie said.
So Charlie's
said.
The other one, right?
Yeah, right. Charlie's like, that's my roommate. And by roommate, I mean lover. And I was like, all right, hey, what you do in your own private residence is up to you, my friend. But try not to walk naked on the streets of Barcelona, because I don't need to see your butt cheeks. They were nice butt cheeks, though. I took a picture of it.
You did?
I whipped. Oh, you kidding me? I was like, this is too good. So I whipped out my camera. But by the time I got my picture composed, he was like halfway around the corner, and it's kind of blurry. So there's like all of us laughing, this band sitting there staring at them, and there's this dude's totally nude butt cheeks.
You know, according to some cultures, Irfan, you would have captured that butt soul.
I think I did. It's haunted me ever since. I can't stop thinking about it.